Golf Between the Ears with Dr. Rico Provasale.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for joining us for another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen because you don't have to. And so with you there, I appreciate it. The Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. Check them out at birdgolf.com or click on their link at golfsmarterpodcast.com. And remember, all listeners of the Golf Smarter podcast receive an exclusive 10% discount to the Bird Golf Academy. Our guest today is Dr. Rico Provasale, author of Golf Between the Ears, a novel which is based on a true story that he read in Sports Illustrated. He's also a medical doctor that has spent decades lecturing and studying somatic reprogramming. So if you have thoughts on the validity of muscle memory, this guy's an expert. He has the answer for you. Stay tuned for that, because I asked him. Now, unlike most interviews, I did this one face-to-face for various reasons. First, he's local for me, so thought I'd go out there. Secondly, there's construction going on above my studio, so I wanted to avoid some of that noise. Lastly, I got a new digital recorder. I wanted to hear what it sounded like, so please let me know what you think of the quality of this one. There is a squeak that runs through this. It has nothing to do with the recorder. The doctor's chair was really squeaky, and he kept rocking back and forth, and it was making me nuts, but there was nothing I can do about it. So let's hear how this all sounds, and we'll start with, welcome, Dr. Provasale.
Hi, Fred. Nice to have you.
And I'm having you. Thank you. It's good that we could do this together. It's fun being face-to-face with somebody when I'm doing an interview. It doesn't usually happen that way. And I appreciate you giving me your time to do this. What is Golf Between the Ears?
Do you remember the famous quote that Arnold Palmer quipped to reporters about the secret to the game? He said, "Golf is a game of inches. The toughest four are played between the ears."
Absolutely.
So I had always remembered that growing up. And I started playing golf in 1951 with sawn-off wooden shaft clubs re-gripped by my dad and playing every Sunday afternoon with the three sons and dad. And we always held Arnold Palmer as our idol. And when he talked about golf between the ears, it just stuck in my mind. And some years ago, I was reading a Sports Illustrated article featuring a coach from Iowa, Ed Hipp, who took some young boys who were complete rookies, had never played golf, and in 3 short years, they won their Iowa State Championship title.
Wow.
What a remarkable event. And again, I sort of earmarked that event. And the following week, I was lecturing in Kansas City, a few hundred miles away from where the team had scored their victory. And one of the doctors I was lecturing had brought his daughter with him to go shopping. And she had gone to school with these boys. So Golf Between the Ears is the title of a book, which is a history, a true story, of the coach Ed Hipp taking these rookies from newbies to the reigning state champs, as well as the individual state medalist champ of Iowa.
So it's an actual story. It's based on an actual story. It's not just a novel.
It's a novel based on fact.
Okay.
Inspired by true events, slightly embellished for dramatic effect. Why not? Exactly. It's a page turner and a lot of fun, and it's packed with some very useful information on learning how to disarm your inner critic.
And that's what I'd love to talk about, because we talk about golf smarter all the time, and that's the whole idea, is silencing that critic.
Exactly. So what's important to realize is that there's nobody that you will ever meet that doesn't have a critic. That's a given. And I present a workshop called Golf Between the Ears. It's found at my website, golfbetweentheears.com. And in the workshop, we describe to participants how their personal critic was born and how it grew out of control. So, for example, it's a given fact that we're all seeking approval, and we want to help mommy do the dishes, and maybe in our enthusiasm, we break a dish. Well, usually we can get away with that once. But if it happens repeatedly, we may get scolded or reprimanded or called a klutz. So the small child looking for approval is going to remember that. And to demonstrate this, who hasn't seen this happen in a grocery store aisle or in a department store where we have a two-year-old that's like a wild horse and picking up things to help mommy shop? And mommy says, no, we don't need that. Put it back. Well, maybe after the 10th or 11th attempt to help put food in the basket for mom, the child is being scolded, is being reprimanded. And by the time he gets to the checkout counter, he's still grabbing things like candy or whatnot, putting them in his mouth. And the mother starts scolding the child, slapping the child. And there's a very deep confusion for this child. Because he's learning by doing. In fact, we could call any two-year-old the Discovery Channel. He learns by exploring, by experimenting. Mm-hmm. And yet, so frequently, he's getting reprimanded. He's getting punished. He's getting scolded. He goes to preschool, and he has to learn to raise his hand before he speaks or before he goes to the potty. He has to share the toys, even though he sees something he's never seen, and he's just roaring to go touch it and to see what it's about. He's told he can't do that. So the child develops what we might call a watchdog. And that watchdog is a very important part of the development of the individual to help him monitor his behavior. Is this going to get me in trouble, or is this okay? We carry this whole need for approval to the golf course.
Mm.
And who hasn't had that pressure on them? They're at the first tee, they're at a swing country club, and the starter calls them up, and they're the last guy in the foursome to hit, and all the other people who are waiting to tee off behind you have been putting nearby or practicing or warming up, and you believe that all eyes are on you as you set up, and you do your waggle, and you do your practice setup, and you do your swing, and instead of paying attention to your natural rhythm and your natural athletic ability, you're focused on the approval that the others will give you in the same way the child focused on approval or disapproval while they were growing up.
Yeah, approval or even the criticism.
Exactly.
It's just what they're going to think about the swing, what they're going to think. Yeah, I mean, I love it when I, you know, swing the club and the rest of the fourth and go, nice swing.
Exactly.
I know it doesn't happen often, but I like when it does happen.
Okay, so what you just said, Fred, is a perfect example of that the critic doesn't just punish us for what we did wrong, because the inner critic also has the ability to comment even on our success.
Yep.
So, for example, you just said, wow, I hit a good shot. All my mechanics were intact. My rhythm was there. I connected square. I sent a beautiful tee shot whistling down the fairway. Boy, was I lucky. So what's important to learn, particularly you'll get a good hands-on experience of this in the workshop, is that this inner watchdog that formed with us to help us determine what was appropriate behavior and misappropriate behavior carries through life. And that even when we succeed, that critic, which was born in our childhood, is still commenting nonstop, putting us down, evaluating, judging us, and generally giving us a hard time. Mm. So we score a birdie on the sixth hole, and instead of saying, yeah, I'm on the roll, we say, well, it's about time, and man, I wonder if I'm going to have it in me to get lucky again today.
Now, before we go further with this, and I definitely want to go further with this, give me a little bit about your background. We call you Dr. Provasoli, but what is it that makes you qualified to be discussing this, please?
For 35 years, I have been practicing mind-body medicine.
Okay.
And my first work is published in a medical textbook on somatic reprogramming.
Which is?
Which is when we have a physical infirmity from an injury, for example. The physical therapists have a very difficult time rehabilitating a person to come back to their normal musculoskeletal function. Neuromuscular pre-programming is a means by which the body can remember their natural synapse from their brain to an extremity and find their normal balance and rhythm in movement. So there are very specific techniques that I've presented to doctors for decades nationally on getting their patients how to return to reprogram their nervous system to reawaken muscles that have grown dormant.
Then you're the perfect person to ask this question. Is there such thing as muscle memory?
Precisely. And unfortunately,
this is an ongoing debate, you know. I mean, there are people who are saying it's not possible. How can a muscle have memory?
If you look at the textbook here in front of you, Functional Soft Tissue Examination and Treatment by Manual Methods, it's a 600-page medical textbook.
And Manual Methods is not the name of the person who wrote this.
Manual Methods
it's,
is not.
It's by Manual Methods.
It's hands-on physical medicine.
Okay.
When a person has an injury, for example, and they break a humerus mm-hmm. in the upper arm and they're put on a sling for 6 or 8 weeks, many people have a hard time ever regaining the normal movement because they're fearful of hurting themselves again.
Sure.
And basically, those muscles have shortened.
Okay.
From inactivity. It's possible to stimulate the neural pathways from the cortex of the brain to the muscle belly and reawaken that pathway, that neural synapse, so that their muscle can indeed start firing again normally. So there's positive muscle memory and there's negative muscle memory that we can reawaken and retrain the normal potential of every muscle in the body. So the answer is unequivocally yes, there is such a thing as muscle memory. And for 35 years, I've been observing it and dedicating myself to teaching people how to reawaken it.
Is muscle memory relevant to a golf swing? I mean, is there muscle memory in a golf swing, something that you can reproduce?
Well, yes, there is. And I'm not sure that's the scope of the conversation right now, but I would say yes, there is. And for example, even in Michael Murphy's classic Golf in the Kingdom, mm-hmm. he says, or Shiva Sayan says, find your natural body and find your natural swing. And when you find that natural swing and you can actually remember how to get back to that natural swing, that will take us through pressure shots. So yes, there is a natural swing. There is muscle memory. You can find your groove and you can find your way to keep in constant contact with that.
All right. I'm so glad that we've really established that, and maybe we're going to have to talk to Carrie Mumford, who says there's no such thing. But it could be a debate. Maybe we'll have you both on. It'll be a fabulous debate. But let's go back to the inner critic, because that, I think, adds strokes to every round.
Well, what's important to realize is that I didn't invent the expression the inner critic. In fact, as you can see on my desk here, I have several textbooks. Soul Without Shame, A Guide to Liberating Yourself from the Judge Within by Byron Brown.
Mm-hmm.
There Is Nothing Wrong With You, Going Beyond Self-Hate by Sherry Huber, and Embracing Your Inner Critic by Hal and Idra Stone.
Okay, and none of those are golf books.
None of those are golf books. So Fred Shoemaker in his School for Extraordinary Golf touches upon the critic, and he calls it the voices. And what I have done is for 15 years investigated, and I've had 11 years of postgraduate study in this aspect of psychology called the superego, which is an expression coined by Freud more than 100 years ago, and basically addresses the fact that a basic part of the psyche is consumed in criticizing itself, criticizing the person, criticizing the individual, both for their poor performance and their success. And when the person that's in therapy understands how they can shift from self-loathing to self-acceptance, it frees up a lot of energy. Now, what does that mean, freeing up a lot of energy? When we're on the golf course, it takes everything we have to relax into our center, to feel the earth beneath us, to feel our feet on the fairway, and to find our tempo and relax into a golf swing. Mm-hmm. However, when we're chewing up our potential energy with negative self-talk, we rob ourselves of that possibility of being in the groove. So my workshop is directed towards helping people to discover the origin of these voices. And we have very specific exercises that help people to contact early memories, early incidences of being punished for what they thought were very innocent adventures in experimentation. So, for example, when we first met on the telephone, Fred, you told me, well, don't expect much from me. I'm a hacker. And when a hacker can be used as a playful joke with your buddies because you had a triple bogey by going out of bounds, and we're having a beer after our ride and say, oh, there goes Fred the hacker. Or I can call myself a hacker because I defend myself right on the first tee without having to convince the people I'm with that I have much capacity to break 100. Right away, the way we use the expression, I'm a hacker, is a reflection of the inner critic. And what the inner critic is trying to do right away is seek approval. However, the inner critic establishes patterns, establishes levels, establishes evaluations, establishes standards, which we can never achieve. Why can't we ever achieve them?
Golf is like that, though.
But why can't we ever achieve those standards? Because they are not our standards. They're standards that we have inherited. And an example of that is when I was growing up, what started off is lovely Sunday afternoons with my brothers and my dad in an exclusive country club outside of Boston, by the time I got to high school, turned to be a shameful event when I'd come home from a tournament, a state tournament, and hadn't made the cut for the final round or hadn't brought home enough trophies like my older brother. I was the object of shame. So what happens is, as we're growing up, we learn ways to protect ourselves from that shame. How do we do that? Oh, I'm just a hacker, and don't expect too much from me.
But even Tiger complains about his rounds.
That's a great question. In golf, there's a never-achieved level of competence of execution. And that Tiger is out now battling, as we speak today, for his eighth consecutive PGA win this year. And whether he makes it or doesn't make it has nothing to do with his satisfaction of his game. And your question is directed more on performance. And, of course, we all want to readily improve our score. We can do that through eliminating self-talk. And as it's as a description of my workshop says, how to disarm your own worst golf partner, your inner critic. And as I say, if anybody treated you as badly as you do yourself, you would never play a round of golf with them again.
Yeah, so, I think that's generally right.
Again, so to get back to Tiger Woods and him not being satisfied, the focus of this discussion in the workshop is not about performance and the mechanics and the score and the handicap as much as your capacity to accept yourself, to start to recognizing the source of the criticism, and learn to disarm that through very specific techniques, which we learn in the workshops, and to get back to the fun of golf. And we have to remember, what are we doing? We are playing golf. We are playing a game, and the purpose of playing games is to enjoy ourselves, enjoy the exercise, enjoy the friends we're out on the golf course with in open air and getting some fresh breath and more oxygen in our brains.
I hope that you're okay with this because I'm going to ask you to do it. We'd like to tease people with what you do in the workshop and get a sense of what kind of success we can get out of that. So if you can give us some tips, some things that you provide in the workshop, you don't have to give everything.
Right. So this is a tease. Is that right?
Absolutely. We got to have a takeaway here. Right. I mean, you can talk for a full half hour and it's like, okay, fine, but what's in it for me?
Okay. We're going to talk about, we're talking about take home value.
Please.
So we're going to do a little exercise with you, Fred, if you're okay with this.
Okay.
And,
I'm a hacker.
You're a hacker. Okay, great. So, if I call you a hacker, that's okay because we're not on the golf course and you don't need my vote. And yet there's a certain sting when you call yourself a hacker. You say it in a jovial way, in a way to disarm any further comment about your handicap. But at the same time, I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
Okay.
What's right about calling yourself a hacker?
It's humbling. It puts me at a level where I'm not being a braggart about my level of play.
Okay. Now, when you call yourself a hacker, otherwise, without protecting yourself in front of others, and you've lost your fifth ball that day through creeks if you're playing down in San Geronimo, it has a lot of water hazards, and you say, geez, I'm such a hacker.
No, if I did that, I'd say I suck.
Okay, I suck. All right. But the point is, the reason that the critic can sting is that there's a multi-level aspect of the anatomy of that voice, and we're going to go through that a little bit right now. Okay, so what's right about calling myself a hacker? Right.
Well, another thing that makes me think of when you ask that question is it says, I'm not a tournament player. I'm not a competitive player. I'm just a weekend player. I go out occasionally, you know, every week or two, and I go out and play. So I'm not a serious player. I think that that's the kind of level it separates right. me.
So again, the voice is seeking approval. The critic, the judgment, mm-hmm. you're putting a value on your capability and your potential as a golfer.
Right.
I'm a hacker.
Don't judge my
level play. Don't judge me. However, right now, we're using the description of a hacker as a way to protect you from humiliation and insult on the course. However, once again, if you miss a 2-foot putt for a par and you say, ooh, you roll your eyes and say, you're just such a hacker, Fred. Why does that hurt? There's three reasons I'd like to explain why that hurts. What do you think they are?
Why it hurts that I say I'm a hacker?
Why does it
sting? When I miss the 2-foot putt?
When you miss the 2-foot putt okay. and you sting yourself with this judgment, which we're going to call coming from the inner critic of authority.
I disappoint myself.
Right. Because we're afraid it's true.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of truth where it's like getting stuck in the underbelly. Oh, I didn't want anyone to know that. The second point is, generally, we're seeking approval from someone, and it could be your dad or your cousin or a business associate or your golf coach, your swing coach.
Your audience.
And it's true, and we want approval, and we're afraid we're not going to get it. And tell me again, what's right about calling yourself a hacker, Fred?
It's an interesting question, what's right about calling myself a hacker as opposed to what's wrong.
Precisely. There's a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably easier to come up with wrong but asking me what's right, I'm going blank here.
Okay. One of the reasons...
I'm supposed to put you on the spot, Doc. Come on.
One of the reasons it's interesting to use this kind of repeating question, and this is what happens in the workshop, is we start to uncover all the fluff and all the layers of wool that protects the basic fact of every kid growing up who never made the cut in Little League, who never made the cut on the hockey team, who never made it to got his varsity letter in high school football because of either an injury or he had to move away. But there's a basic psychological flaw that all of us believe is true. And that flaw is that I'm a hacker and I can never fix it. So once more, for the West Coast audience, I'm going to ask you, Fred, give me one good reason. What's right about calling yourself a hacker?
Well,
I'm going to ask you once
what's
again.
What's interesting is this program, I'm able to hide behind the questions.
Yeah.
So I've never really, I don't think I've spent a whole lot of time exposing myself
right.
in this program. And it makes it very easy to continue on because I don't put my picture up. I don't do things like that.
So let's ask you once more, Fred, one more time.
Oh boy.
What's right about calling yourself a hacker?
It covers up the disappointments that I've had in my sports life and my golf life.
Give me an example of a disappointment, a very specific disappointment.
Disappointment or protecting myself?
Disappointment in your sports history.
When I played Little League and they gave me the bunt sign and I went to bunt and I was holding the bat wrong and I smashed my finger and my fingernail fell off and they called a strike on me. And I was like, but I got hit. Yeah, but you put the bat out there. I was totally disappointed. That was terrible.
And what would be something that I know it's a stretch to go back so many years, but let's imagine we're doing a little drama here. We're doing a little skit. And what would you say? What would that little, how old were you, the Little League guy?
I was about 9.
9 years old, and he was all set up, and he wanted to get his dad's approval, his teammates' approval, his coach's approval, and you screwed up, And what does the child say? What does the little kid say, the 9-year-old?
I tried.
Okay. Et cetera. So you can see how this critic is born from the childhood trying to find a socially acceptable behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always looking for approval. And all through life, in our sports activities, in our college activities, in our business activities, in our family activities, we are always looking for approval in protecting the idea that there's something flawed with us and we don't want anyone to find it out. And by calling myself a hacker, I get off the hook.
So how do we quiet that voice?
Well, that's where you have to sign up for the workshop.
Oh, come on.
I'm making a joke here. There are techniques that we can learn in the workshop, but one of them, for example, it's a little joke that I use, and I have caller ID on my cell phone, and I have a significant other who's calling me about, well, you know, I don't know what color fingernail polish to get today. And then an hour later, she says, well, do you think I should tint my hair a little lighter or darker? And then it might be another hour later, and I say, well, I don't know whether I should get the steak tonight or the organic turkey. And after I get 7 of these phone calls, I just look at the caller ID, and I just say, oh, it's my beloved, and I don't have to interrupt my flow right now to answer her questions. In the same way, through enough exercises and contacting some of the history of the development of these voices in you, which are hammering you and castrating you and punishing you and criticizing you and feeding you with negativity, eventually you can learn to source where they're coming from. And in the same way that I can hear the phone ring, pick it up, look at the caller ID, through practice, you can learn to recognize that these voices aren't true. They're not your voices. They're a collection that you've inherited, and you can relax into your stance and go back to your golf game and learning once again to enjoy being outdoors with your friends.
And that's probably the most important part.
That's the most important part, because my motto is play more, think less.
So you said you've been lecturing to physicians for 35 years. Tell me about how long you've been lecturing to golfers.
This is a fresh adventure. My book is in print. You can find it at
www.golfbetweentheears.com.
And you can also find my contact, rigoprovisoli@yahoo.com. And we're always interested in people who want to sponsor the event. For example, last week, I coached the Sonoma State University team. And
how do you approach that? Let's talk about that for a minute. How do you work with college kids?
Well, first of all,
do you do it on an individual or a group basis?
Well, we do it as a group basis because most people are basically a little shy to expose that private life of theirs.
Hello?
And we're all protecting our own little secrets.
Uh-huh.
So I had about 15 young men, and apparently they rank number 15 in the nation.
Wow.
As collegiate teams, and one of the young men ranks, I guess, one of the top collegiate golfers in America. And we use a lot of comedy and entertainment and to lighten up their engagement in starting to confess to the group some of their humiliating experiences. And it triggers a memory synapse. Say, oh, yeah, I can remember the day that I remembered I'm never going to make a mistake again, so the guys won't ridicule me or laugh at me or tease me. And through an afternoon, usually we have a 5-hour session, people can really get a handle on how their inner critic was born, when it was born, who were some of the authority figures in their life that still echo in their self-judgment, and we teach them how to disengage in a very playful way so that they can get back to their natural swing.
Fabulous. Well, best of luck. I hope that that you get contacted and people want you to come out and speak at their events and their golf courses. And this is how I found you, actually. I was playing golf last week, and there was a flyer at the golf course I was playing at, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that's a local phone number. I'm going to give you a call, and we'll get together. So thanks so much for your time.
It was
really
a pleasure,
appreciate
friend.
It. Rico, it's good to meet
Thank you.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Hey, Kenny, how are you?
Hey, Fred, I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Hey, I wanted to read a brief email that I received yesterday before we get into your review, and it just makes me so proud to be associated with Edwin Watts Golf when a listener writes and says this. This is from Kendall Hall in Bakersfield, California, and he said, I just ordered my first club from Edwin Watts Golf. Great service. I didn't think customer service like that existed anymore.
That's great.
Isn't that phenomenal?
That is phenomenal. You know, it takes a little bit more sometimes when you receive good service to write a letter, and we appreciate every one of them, that's for sure, just because it's something that's expected a lot of times. But when somebody emails in or writes in to just acknowledge the fact, that's always a pleasure.
Because usually when people write, it's to complain about something.
Which, I have to be honest, I don't get often, but, you know, at the same time, it's easier to write about a complaint than it is about good service.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's really interesting that you will create more loyal customers, no matter what your business is, if you take care of a problem as opposed to giving just good service.
You are 100% correct.
You know, if you give good service, and think about this, on any business, if you give good service, that's expected. And there's nothing that's going to create any loyalty. But if you take care of the smallest problem for any of your customers, they're going to be a customer forever.
You're right. Some of my best customers that I have were created through a problem, small to some extent, but at the same time, you know, it was a problem that was fixed and taken care of, and they felt like they were treated really good. But to that same extent, it does take a little more effort sometimes when
yeah.
you get a letter regarding a compliment, and we appreciate those very much.
Yeah. So, Kendall, thank you so much for sending me that note. I'm really glad that I could share it with Kenny, but I wanted to share it publicly.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So what do you got to share with us today?
I actually was at the driving range on Friday. A company that actually helped sponsor the Accenture Match Play, Bridgestone Golf, which you don't hear a ton about. They don't have, you know, a lot of players out there on tour that play their products, but they have a few very well-recognized names, Freddie Couples being one of them.
I like their ball.
Their ball is phenomenal, I will say that. The thing I wanted to touch on, though, was their hard goods.
Okay.
And I will say this, I hit a lot of products, obviously, but from top to bottom, I'm talking about from woods, irons, wedges, everything that they have, I fell in love with every one of them.
Really?
I did. And, you know, they offer the Bridgestone J33 is the product line that I'm talking about. The driver, they have one that's designed for the better player and then one for the average golfer. But from that standpoint, I mean, to pull a driver out of a bag, you know, he had quite a few drivers in a bag, and I just pulled one that I liked, you know, the Loft 9.5 with the ProLaunch shaft. And because the driver that I was using typically has a little bit lower ball flight. So, but immediately, I mean, I just fell in love with the golf club. The trajectory was awesome. The spin rate was perfect. And then Rob, the rep that handles our area, he said, here, I want you to try these fairway woods. And their fairway wood is designed for a little bit better player because the center of gravity is not quite as low. You know, they don't hit them as high as some, but still just an awesome golf club. And then we moved on to their hybrids, the utility woods, the J33 utility woods. They offer two lines in that, one which has a little more offset and one that has a little bit less offset for the better player. Again, phenomenal. Hmm. And then they offer several different models in the irons. They have the cavity back, which is a chambered iron, which what they do is they have weights in the bottom of the sole, which are prevalent. You can see them, and the weight is more on the heel and the toe for their higher handicap players, which also offers a higher MOI, which is moment of inertia, which we talk about quite a bit in drivers as well as in irons. And then they go all the way through the line of irons designed for each ability of player, whether you're a high handicap, a medium handicap, or a very good golfer. And I hit the whole line. I said, let me just hit the whole thing, and that way I can talk about it with some knowledge and let the people know what it is that you offer. And I fell in love with every single one of them. I mean, from a look standpoint, they're great. From a feel standpoint, very, very soft feel. They use a 1031 carbon steel, which is a soft metal. Like, you know, a lot of people use a, anytime you go lower in number, like a 535 or a 631 or whatever, it's a little bit harder. They use a very soft metal, and response is phenomenal. Trajectory was great. They have a low center of gravity in most of their irons. The J33 forged blade obviously does not. That's designed for the very good player, very good ball striker. So the whole line, though, is great. And then we went into the wedges. They offer the J33 forged black finish, and they also offer a chrome model. From a personal standpoint, the whole line is phenomenal. And if you have a chance to get out there and try them, I would definitely say go out there and give them a shot.
I've written so many different questions just based on what you said, and I'm going to try to get to these, but not all at once. Are hybrids also for the better players, or is
Absolutely.
It mostly? So hybrids are being played by all level of players?
I mean, look on tour. Look how many hybrids are being used on tour. You know, the day of the 1-2 and 1-2 iron on tour is not obsolete. There's a lot of guys that still use them, but I mean the advantage that you have with hybrids is being able to get it out of the rough a lot easier than you can. Anytime you use a long iron in the rough, it typically the grass grabs the hosel and closes the club down. And yeah, myself and as well as 95% of the golfers out there see this all the time. It's going to be a low hook. You know, you're basically shutting the club down and you're going to rope hook the thing, but what hybrids do is they are able to get through the grass a lot easier, get the ball airborne a lot easier. And guys on tour use them just because they can get the ball up and stop it a lot better than they can a 2-iron.
Hmm.
I mean, it's just phenomenal. It's changed golf quite a bit.
Hmm. Absolutely. Another question that I wanted to know, and if you don't mind, could you please define for us what you mean by high, medium, and a very good player? I mean, I guess that would be based on the handicap or on the scoring, but how can we understand where we fall in that?
The way I look at it, an average player, which is the majority of people out there, are anywhere from, you know, a 12 to 18 to 20 handicap. That's what I would consider an average player.
Okay, so that means if you're scoring in the...
You know, if you're scoring in the 80s and 90s, low 90s, that's an average player. That's what a lot of people out there shoot, anywhere from 80 to 92, 93, something like that.
Okay.
And that's an average golfer. A high handicap is somebody that's shooting higher than that, which they need a little bit more help. There's nothing wrong with admitting that. The problem that we have a lot of times is having the customer admit what type of golfer they are. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, look, I shoot 95 or 100. Well, guess what? For you, there's a club out there that's going to help you a lot more than a less offset club.
And that doesn't mean, hey, I broke 90 once. Because I consider myself, I'll fall right in that average range that you talked about, but I've broken 80 three times. Now, I know that's like, whoa, three times, big deal. To me, it was a huge deal, but I know that I shoot in the mid to upper 80s on a regular basis and in the low 90s when I'm not playing much.
Yeah, it's the thing is just being honest with yourself. The only thing you're hurting if you're not is you're hurting yourself.
I'm honest with myself. I think it was amazing that I was just honest with you.
There you go. And then the better player, obviously, is going to be like a single-digit handicap, a guy that shoots in the 70s most of the time when he's out there. And they know what they can play and what they can't play. Anytime we can get a club in your hands that's going to benefit your game, it's going to make the game more enjoyable for you.
Right.
The majority of the manufacturers cater to the medium to high handicap player.
So that means that when you were talking about the Bridgestone, the other question that I had kind of falls into this, that manufacturers really do put out product that is for all range of golfers. They don't just have a product that says this will work for everybody.
No, there's not. There's not one product that typically works for everybody. That's why every brand out there, whether it's Callaway, Nike, Ping, you name it, they offer a club that's designed for, a specific golfer in mind. There's not one magic club for everybody.
Great. All right. And
because everybody doesn't strike the ball the same.
Well, then there's some, if you don't mind, I would like to go into an Ask Kenny for a second, because we got a question that kind of falls into this. And let me make sure that I find the correct one. Every week that we do this, I print out all the questions and I review them. But there's one that came from Doug Culpepper in Levine, Arizona. And it seems to me that this is something that everybody is a bit perplexed about. And he says, I know it's best to get fitted for clubs, but if you can't really afford to buy a custom set, how do you know whether you need a stiff or regular flex? And the reason I bring this up is because it seems that people think that when you get fitted for clubs, you're having a custom set made for yourself. Is that true?
It's a very good question. You're having a custom set made for you, but it's nothing out of the norm for the manufacturer. So anytime you do custom fit, which is it's a word that might scare some people, it's not. If you're shorter and you need a 2-degree flat minus a half an inch golf club, it's custom fit for you, but it comes direct from the manufacturer at no extra charge. So if you order a Bridgestone set, 2 degrees flat minus a half an inch, all I do is call the manufacturer. I get the clubs custom made for you, no extra charge, and we ship them directly to you. I mean, it's the same exact golf club that we would stock on the shelf as standard. You know, you just need to get them fit for your size. Okay, so there's absolutely, don't let the word scare you. Every single manufacturer out there, whether it's a low-end brand or a very high-end brand, will custom fit their golf club for your need. So don't let the word custom scare you.
No, and it should make you feel great that you can get something that is designed for the way you play golf.
Exactly, especially at no extra charge.
What's the discussion? And if you are a Golf Smarter listener and you go to edwinwattsgolf.com/golfsmarter, you get free shipping.
There you go.
There you go. Hey, let's talk about what we're giving away this week, and that would be the F2 Wedge by Face Forward.
Face Forward, correct.
And you have options of degrees, so whatever you win, you can tell Kenny if you want the right hand, left hand, 52, 56, 58, 60, whatever. But if you'd like to win an F2 Wedge by Face Forward, please send an email with the subject F2 and send it to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com along with your email address. I'd really appreciate if you can include your name and mailing address, your shipping address, so that when you do win the prize, we know where to send it. For more information, check the show notes. Deadline for entries is midnight, March 5, and the winner will be announced on the program, which we'll produce on March 6, 2007. And like Doug just did, if you'd like to send a question to Ask Kenny, go ahead and send that to fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com with the subject Ask Kenny, and if Kenny answers it, you are going to receive a free Edwin Watts Golf Smarter hat. And you can wear that with pride and tell all your friends to listen to the show. And
there you go.
We love that kind of stuff. All right, Ken, we'll talk to you next week, and we'll pull out the name of the winner.
Sounds good. Thanks, Fred.
All right, bud. Thanks so much. Hey, you know, I wanted to issue an apology to a couple of people, especially if I offended you. A couple weeks ago when I did the interview with Rabbit, I made a comment about golf standing for gentlemen only, ladies forbidden. It was a joke. And if you were offended, I really apologize. It's not the way I think. It's not the way I act. And I'm sure that if you asked my wife or my children if I'm sexist or anything like that, they'd be kind of shocked that that came out like that. So again, I'm truly sorry that I offended anyone by making that comment. It was a bad joke, and I promise it won't happen again. If you did like the interview from last week with Peter Brusso and you're new to the Golf Smarter podcast and you're interested in these type of teachings, then I invite you to do what many of the other Golf Smarter teammates do and go back into previous episodes and listen to some of the interviews with people like Dr. Joe Parent or Michael Russ, Kerry Mumford, Dr. Robert K. Winters. There's a lot to choose from if you like the idea of the mental part of the game. And we cover that in many different ways with many different people. So please check out the old shows. They're all there and they're all free, which brings me to my last rant of the day, and that's satellite radio. There's this, you know, move of merging the two big satellite companies together, and it just makes me think that as a podcast supporter and a listener, doesn't it just make you laugh that people pay for quality content that is so readily available for free? I mean, I really enjoy this medium, and over the next few months, I'm going to have more announcements of programming and a new website that will offer more podcast content for intelligent and discerning listeners like yourself who demand sound advice. Now, this week's closing quote comes from Bob Hausman of Carlisle, Pennsylvania. He quotes Bobby Jones, who provides a valuable piece of advice for all of us. It's nothing new or original to say that golf is played one stroke at a time, but it took me many years to realize it. Please send your quotes, your comments, your suggestions, your requests, and your complaints to Fred at GolfSmarterPodcast.com.